Hello, America, how are you? That's probably America,
fuck yeah.
That was probably my most in tune of that song.
It's good.
Thus far. I've got some terrible ones. The second episode was
good.
Hello, I'm Jeffrey Hedley, host of the Original Unoriginal Podcast, and welcome to the Original Unoriginal Podcast. Once again, I am joined by a man that I'm going to say this. I call him my best friend in this world, and I'm going to say that with absolute honesty. Thanks. The laying out of the hands. Here we go.
Yeah, girl.
But anyway, I'm joined by my very good friend, Mr. Jesse Sykes. Say
Donka.
Hello.
Say Donka. Hello.
Yes, Jesse's back, and we're here for another installment of the Original Unoriginal Podcast. As I just said, you know what? I'm going to put this in the books. This is the fourth episode of the Original Unoriginal Podcast.
Yes, it is.
I'm not gonna mince words here. We just recorded minutes ago the third episode, which you may or may not have listened to, which was pretty much us talking about P.T. Anderson's Magnolia for 45 minutes, which is awesome.
Yes.
But we're not here to talk about that. We've got a couple of topics today, very much in the vein of the second episode, which you hopefully listen to at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go ahead and say hello to a lot of the new listeners, because with the Magnolia and this one, I'm hoping will be the first we advertise with. So if you're a newcomer to the Original Unoriginal Podcast, welcome, and I do hope you'll subscribe and tell your friends that it may just be a bunch of dudes shooting the shit, and I'm finally going to get to use this line on the air for our dyslexic listeners, tooshing the tish.
Tooshing the tish.
And I fucked that up again, but it's fine. Okay. At least I got the line on the air at this point. It's on the air. Okay, so anyway, we're gonna have a few topics today. We got a few ranging topics. Some of them are kind of sad, but we'll still celebrate in a way. We'll get to that. But the first thing we want to talk about, very much in the same vein of our annoyance about the Entertainment Weekly 1000th issue, New Classics issue, we're here to talk about our first topic today is VH1. Last week, today is June 30th, 2008. And last week, as you may have seen on VH1, they introduced another in their acclaimed series of I Love The different things. And this was, of course, I Love the New Millennium, which, right the fuck there, let's take issue. I mean, I'm at least glad they gave it kind of an open title like that, where they could do it again and it wouldn't be so bad. But the point of I Love the New Millennium, in the same vein of I Love the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and there, so on, various secondary and third volumes, was basically a retrospective of, in this case, 2000 to 2007, which once again proves they should not have even started yet.
What the fuck?
They should have waited till 2010 and went from 2000 to 2009, like a normal I Love the series.
What the fuck?
But we'll get on to our anger at one point. I would like to say... I would like to say a couple of good things, believe it or not, which is, it was enjoyable. I watched, from as much as I'm bitching about it, and I think I have every right to bitch about it, I watched it and I enjoyed it in the same way I enjoyed the other ones, because it is still, you know, all your favorites, like Michael Ian Black and Hal Sparks and a bunch of really, 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 really funny people, including Luis Guzman.
Yes.
Who, if you just listened to the Magnolia podcast,
but full circle, even this is interweaving.
Take a steel umbrella outside for those frogs.
Yeah, I did.
But anyway, Luis Guzman is one of the panelists, of course. He's been a panelist on a number of them at this point. But a lot of funny people. And it was funny, but... It really depends on whether or not you're able to suspend your annoyance and, like, what-the-fuckness.
Yeah.
Of what the hell are you doing a retrospective of a decade when the decade isn't finished?
You're stupid.
It really is stupid. It's really very stupid.
Now, like, just wait! Just fucking...
Two more years! It would not have been that long. We would still remember that I Love the 80s was funny, and Michael Ian Black can dye his hair black if it turns gray. I mean, it's not a problem.
Michael Ian Gray.
Exactly. That crazy, funny, three-name Jew. But anyway... I Love the New Millennium. I will, like I said at the beginning of this, I will give them credit for this. They called it I Love the New Millennium. They didn't call it I Love the Double O's. They called it I Love the New Millennium, which is good, because that means maybe at the end of this year, like the same way they do
they can add
2008. They can add on year by year, which would be an interesting concept. Every year it could be an annual tradition. They could put out a new I Love the episode, which would be kind of cool.
Yes.
if they hadn't done the three-decade ones before and made it part of the system, and then now we have I Love the New Millennium and What the Fuck.
Yeah.
We're going to say that a lot, because it really is a What the Fuck kind of situation.
Yeah, What the Fuck.
But talking about some of the things they talked about, I'll go ahead and start by telling you this. And Jesse didn't actually watch I Love the New Millennium. Which means you're lucky or unlucky, depending on
but
how you
feel. But I can still comment on stuff.
And you'll probably see it, because they'll rerun it like 40 times a day, like they
times.
Do all the time.
Yeah.
But in this, it was good. I mean, the one thing I'll say about it is I'll say it is the best, I Love the series they've done since I Love the 80s 3D, which was the last good one, really.
What else have they done after that?
Okay, they've done, I'll give you the list. They've done, I Love the, they started with I Love the 80s, that was the original.
Yes.
And then they did I Love the 70s, and then they did I Love the 80s,
Strikes Back.
They did I Love the 70s Volume 2. Mm. They did I Love the 90s, which was where this problem kind of started. I Love the 90s Part 2. And then they did I Love the 80s 3D. And I think they may have done a third 90s, but I'm not entirely sure. But the point is, this is a brand new one. But talking about I Love the 90s, which is, like, I think the most heinous of all of them. I mean, even this is stupid in concept, but it was way better than I Love the 90s. Yeah. And here's why. I Love the 90s was chock full in both of its volumes. Or three, I don't remember, because there might have been a third. In all of its volumes, was chock full of historical inaccuracies. Like, they tried to claim that Quantum Leap started in 1993, when we all know it started in the 80s, for damn sure. It started in it at the very most recent 1987, and at the earliest 1984. I mean, it was an 80s show.
Yeah.
Watch the show. It's got Scott Bakula in it. What more do you have to say? It was
not
the 80s.
Not a damn thing. It's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. Actually, it's one of my favorites of all time. But just the point is, Quantum Leap did not start in the 93. Now, a lot of people that I've talked to about this, they say, well, they did that because the show ended in 93, which would be a good argument if it had been the biggest show on TV when it ended.
At
which, I mean, it was a great show, and it was a big show. It was a very popular show. But when it went off the air in 93, I mean, it had fallen out of the top 20, top 30, top 50 TV shows a long time ago. I mean, it was ready to go on its way out. And that was the whole point of the final episode of that show, which, if you may remember, sees Sam go back to a time that may or may not be his home. It's very, very confusing. But the point is, they left it open. They left it open. Well, not really a cliffhanger, but they left it open-ended that if they could have come back for a sixth season, they would have. But they didn't, but it ended well. But the point is, like I said, in 1993, it wasn't that popular anymore. It really fucking wasn't. That was the first, like one of the first of many historical inaccuracies with the I Love the 90s series. But let's talk about I Love the New Millennium. Let's talk about this. One of the first historical inaccuracies I remember, and I'm going to click on the article about it just to see if I'm wrong about this, and I may be actually, is they claimed that Janet Jackson's quote-unquote wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl took place in 2004. I contend that it took place in 2003. And especially, go ahead and click on the article.
On the wardrobe malfunction.
Let's see what happened. When did it happen? February 1st. Okay, it was 2004, so you got me there on that one. I Love the New Millennium. But still.
You saucy devil.
But yeah, like, the point is, like, it's okay. Jesse just bumped the table.
No, it hurt. That's why I said,
oh,
out
I'm
shit.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I thought you were worried that you... Okay.
No, we're good.
Now I'm worried about... I'm a douche.
No, it's...
I'm
so
sorry.
I love you. It's okay.
Okay. But anyway, talking about the new millennium, they got a lot... They've got some interesting things. They have some things... Like, speaking... If you want to speak in the criteria of... They talk about it when it's popular. If you want to use that explanation to explain Quantum Leap, which, once again, they misfired on that really badly, there are a few things they put in certain years that I'm like, they weren't popular at that point yet. I'm trying to think of one really good one that really bothered me, which is, let's see here. To Catch a Predator, that's a fantastic example. To Catch a Predator, which is the Dateline subseries about catching pedophiles. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't remember it being a big deal, like where everybody talked about it, everybody made jokes about it, until I will say mid-06 at the most. And even if it started in 2005, I mean, I really feel like they're just kind of padding it out. They're just trying to pad the hour.
Yeah.
I mean, To Catch a Predator is a fantastic show, and it's put away a lot of douchebags, but still... It's a lot of this is going to be just me bitching about things in the way that I hate to bitch about things, which is just bitching for no reason. But I kind of feel like I have to, because, but it's also that, like, I'm looking at this, and I've always been of the believer that you can't really, you, The biggest problem I have with I Love the New Millennium is the fact that, of course, they did 2007, which was just last year.
Uh-huh.
They're looking back on it like, remember what our haircuts were like in 2007? What the fuck was that about? I mean, don't give me that shit. Like, don't lie to me. That's my problem. But just to talk about some of the things to talk about, like for instance, let's talk about 2007 right off the bat. Their listed things include the movie 300, the Geico Caveman commercials, the iPhone, Drew Carey taking over for Bob Barker on The Price is Right, Transformers, Rehab by Amy Winehouse, Don Imus with his nappy-headed hose controversy, that crazy astronaut who tried to kidnap the woman who was cheating on... It's you remember that story. Umbrella by Rihanna. The TV show Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Which I'm going to go ahead and say, what the fuck is that doing there? I mean, I love Fox 40, but what the hell? David Beckham joining the LA Galaxy. Chris Daughtry? Really?
Yeah.
Guy Liner. Michael Vick's Dogfighting Investigation. The song Hey There Delilah by Plain White Tees.
Well, that's a little bit retarded because, I guess if they're talking about the popularity, but Hey There Delilah came out a couple of years ago, didn't it?
I believe
2005 or something?
It was out a lot longer than it's probably... I mean, you can look it up.
No, it was on their most recent CD, but it was on their first CD, too, I think.
That's right. The third single released from the rock band Plain White Tees, 2005 album All That We Needed, and then re-released in 2007.
Yeah, 2005.
Okay, that's. But once again, that's going on that criteria of we're talking about it when it was popular.
When it was popular,
which once again puts the whole Quantum Leap thing in question.
Yeah.
Like,
it was not popular.
It was not popular at that point. Quantum Leap was not popular in 93. It was popular in like 87. That was or 88. Wasn't popular in 93. So I'm gonna go ahead and take. Let's just go through the years. There's only 8 years, and there's not much to talk about. Let's go through this before we get to our next topic. It'll help. We'll do just like them. We're going to pad this podcast with a bunch of meaningless talk about stuff that probably isn't that great.
Yeah,
So, first off, in 2000, they have Budweiser's Wise Up ad campaign. They have Dude, Where's My Car? Yeah. Jackass, the 2000 Florida presidential election. Okay, of course that worked. Dennis Miller joining the commentary team of Monday Night Football. The Razor Scooter, Survivor, Who Let the Dogs Out, Gladiator, TiVo, Big Mouth, Billy Bass, CSI Crime Scene Investigation, Aaron Brockovich, Napster, David Crosby, Fathering the Child of Melissa Etheridge, and MTV Cribs, and Castaway. Now, I feel like that douchebag who just bitches about things to bitch at this point, but at the same time, I feel like it bears it. Like, it bears being bitched about. So in 2000, they're talking about the Budweiser Was Up campaign, which that's another one of those things where I'm going to click on this and find out when it actually happened, because let's see. Catchphrases from 1999. Booyah! I got them on their first mistake. Okay, we all remember the original Was Up commercial, which took place at the Super Bowl. The first time was at a Super Bowl, and if this article is correct, that was in 1999, meaning it was January or February 1999.
Which is a considerable amount before 2000.
Oh, most definitely. And considering that if I've watched the show correctly, these are in the order as they aired on the show, that's definitely wrong.
Yeah.
Let's see. Dude, Where's My Car? Jackass.
Dude, Where's My Car? Let's just go out and say that's the shittiest movie ever made.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad, but I like it.
I
I'm so sorry.
Hate it. So, dude, what's mine say? Sweet. What's mine say? Dude, what's mine say? Sweet.
Really,
Ashton Kutcher.
Really,
you suck penis.
Really, I just watch it at this point because it was like one of Jennifer Garner's first movies.
Yeah.
And she's like cute as fucking button in that picture. I mean, she's dreamy as fuck now. Have you seen Juno? Of course you have.
She was a little overrated too. I liked it. I thought it was funny. But it was just, I don't know, I don't think it deserved all the hype.
This is a tangent that I wouldn't mind going off on.
It was no better than Little Miss
Sunshine.
Let's talk
about Juno for a second. Here's the thing about Juno. The minute I saw it last December, the one thing that I was worried about, and it is coming true, is the fact that people are going to, it's going to end up being the next Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
And not in the good way. I mean, it's going to be the movie that people are wearing t-shirts for that have never even fucking seen the movie. And that bothers me. And because of that, a lot of you may have noticed this, if you still like the movie. And I mean, even I agree that there are certain things about it that have become a problem. But if you still like the movie and you understand what I'm talking about, you may have noticed around Oscar time, there was a groundswell of just Juno hate. People started hating that movie right around Oscar time, right around the time Diablo Cody won the Oscar. And it's a shame. I mean, if you're...
I'm not saying that I don't like the movie. Yeah, the movie was good. The movie was funny. But it was... And it was nothing really special. It was just a bunch of one-liners. I mean, most of it was just... And it did have levels. The Ellen Page, terrific performance. Terrific Michael performances Cera. All around. Yeah. I mean, very... It was good. It was quality. It was nice levels to it. But I just think it was a little bit overrated.
I wouldn't say that it was overrated. I'll say it's becoming overrated.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm talking about is sort of why. One other thing I want to talk about that I was talking about with Stephanie back when I was in school is we were talking about the fact that we've known Michael Cera. You know Michael Cera.
Yeah, Arrested Development.
Arrested Development. Thank you for saying that. See, this is the problem we have. We were walking down the street one day. We were having a chat about this. And we were talking about the fact that here's the situation. People are going to say, you know, like we almost toyed with making shirts that said... That say, we knew Michael Cera. What was it? He was our George Michael before he was your Evan or Bleecker. We almost totally making shirts that said that because it bothers us. We're huge Michael Cera fans. And let me go ahead and put a little plug in. If you have not seen Clark and Michael, which is his online series with Clark Duke, you need to go watch that shit. It is one of the funniest things you'll ever see. ClarkandMichael.com. Check it out. It's very funny stuff. But the point is, we knew him from like little indie things as an Arrested Development, which is one of the most underappreciated.
By audiences.
The critics loved it, but underappreciated by audiences shows all the time. So nobody really knew him.
But it was so... Oh, the show is just so fucking hysterical.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God.
And thank God for that movie, huh?
It's like the fun... When he was trying to join the Blue Man Group...
Yes.
And he said, I just blew myself.
We could go on for
comedic,
hours.
Just gorgeous in the dryness of it. Yes. It was just... That was the original Juno. I mean, that's what Juno was. It was one-liners. It was dry
Juno
humor.
Really is.
It was. I mean,
Juno really did kind of come out of the Arrested Development generation. But as I mentioned before, Arrested Development. Have you heard about the movie?
They're making it.
They are making a movie next summer that is more than likely going to be co-directed by one of the show's like more prominent directors, Mitchell Russo, but co-directed by him and Ron Howard.
Oh wow.
Because Ron Howard, he was the narrator. He loved the show, and rightfully so. And the movie's coming out next year.
That is it going to have like the same cast?
Oh yeah,
that movie's
slowly gathering the cast. Although the one thing I have to say, and if you're a viewer of Arrested Development, I don't know if you'll know why this is funny or not. I don't know if you watch. How much of it have you watched?
I've seen a good bit of.
Okay, one of the funniest things about the Arrested Development movie is when it was first announced, late last year, early this year. When they were first like kind of putting it out there that maybe it might happen, when they were first talking about it on IMDb, the only cast member who was confirmed was the kid who plays Anyang. Everybody else was just rumored.
That's perfect.
Everybody else was rumored, but Anyang was confirmed.
He was confirmed.
I love it.
That's hysterical.
Anyang. But yeah. So yeah, Arrested Development. There's a movie coming out next year. But talking about Juno, like, but yeah, Michael Cera. Like I really feel like that's the biggest travesty of the whole situation. Is Michael Cera? He's a funny guy, and
very funny.
He's younger. He's younger than me. He's a little bit older than you. I mean, he's really of our generation,
yeah.
Which is rare. I mean, there are not that many people. Like when you talk about the young generation of actors, it usually takes people a long time to get that good.
Mm.
But he's good.
He's good. I just think he's starting to fall into a typecast,
which
track.
Is a problem. Although, I mean, that is his acting style. That is his shtick.
Of that same nervous guy.
We worry about that, too.
Yeah.
Michael Cera, who's a very talented fella, here's hoping his next few pictures, kind of take him out of that. He's got a couple movies coming out. He's got a movie called Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which comes out later this year. It's kind of like a dry romantic comedy, which may fall into the Juno rut, which I worry about. He's got a movie coming out next year with Jack Black and Christopher Mintz-Plasse. You may remember as the young man who played McLovin. It's a movie called... What is it called? It's like... It's not called BC, but it's something like... It's set in the Stone Age, but it's like Jack Black and the kid who played McLovin, and then they're like... It's like a buddy movie, but it's set in the Stone Age. And it's Judd Apatow producing, and he may be directing, I'm not entirely sure. No, Harold Ramis is directing it.
Oh, wow.
Harold Ramis directing, Harold Ramis and Judd Apatow co-write it.
That That could be really
It's going to be an interesting picture. But yeah, that's the next movie. It's called Year One. That's it. It's called Year One. It's set in the Stone Age, and it's Jack Black, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, and Michael Cera, a bunch of like the Apatow regulars. Mm. It looks like it's going to be a great picture. Apatow can really do no wrong at this point. He really can.
Have you seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
I haven't.
I haven't seen it either.
Thank you for being like me.
I really want to watch it.
Me too.
Very much. I just really want to see the guy's penis, but that was... I'm straight.
I never had the chance to see it because when I was away at school, it never played to any of the theaters I could get to readily. And then when I got home, it was playing at the Dollar Theater, and I kept calling you guys, but your phone, like, I guess malfunctioned like you were talking about. I never got a hold of you. I never got to see it. I wanted to go with you guys.
You called us?
I called you guys at least seven times.
Side note, Verizon Wireless sucks penis.
Yeah, I've called Mark and Jesse Sells to go see that, and Baby Mama, the Tina Fey movie.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Here's hoping that either of those movies is still playing at like one of the local theaters or something, but it was playing at the Dawa Theater a few weeks back, and I really wanted to go see a double feature.
Dawa Theater.
I'm sorry. But yeah, we're going off on a tangent, so...
That's
alright. But that's the point of the podcast. Yeah. You're feeling the groove, you're feeling
tangents.
It.
It's good.
That's the point. We're just going to go off on tangents and
exactly.
Toosh the damn tish.
Toosh the damn motherfucking tish.
We're going to put that on a shirt.
Toosh the tish.
On the original Unoriginal Podcast, or the UP, if
America,
you like.
America, fuck yeah.
But yeah, the original Unoriginal Podcast, the OUP. Are you down with OUP?
Down, you and me. OUP.
Yeah, you know me.
Yeah, bitch.
What are we talking about?
I don't even fucking know. 2001!
2001, let's get on this. Zoolander, live with Regis and Kelly. This is, of course, when she replaced Kathy Lee. Thank God. Enrique Iglesias' Hero, low-rise jeans, Fear Factor, Sharon Stone's husband being bit by a Komodo dragon, which I didn't learn about until
what?
Pearl Harbor, the movie, which, overrated, I say. iPods, The Weakest Link, Moulin Rouge, and then Lady Marmalade from Moulin Rouge. Winona Ryder's Shoplifting Scandal, Shaggy and Rick Rock's It Wasn't Me, you remember that song. Segway.
On the bathroom,
it wasn't me. Segway, Christopher Nolan's Memento, and Vince McMahon's The XFL, and then, of course, America sort of coming together following September 11th. But yes, a lot of stuff. It's none of it. See, like I said, I still feel guilty. I feel like I'm just bitching to bitch.
To bitch,
yeah. And I don't want to do that, but it just feels like I have to, because there's something about this feels wrong. It's funny, but it feels wrong, man.
It's okay.
It feels
wrong. You'll be alright.
But yeah, whatever. But yeah, 2002, Spider-Man, The Color Alert Terror System, Yao Ming coming to America, Robert Blake's murder trial, The Ring, Liza Minnelli marrying David Guest.
Yes!
Andrew W.K.'s Party Hard, and then his series of albums that were all songs about partying that had the same beat and everything. But we still love him because he's an awesome guy.
Basically.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Botox. They haven't listed as Botox parties, which I never heard of, but just Botox.
Botox
in general kind of came prominent in 2005. I'll agree with that. Ted Williams being cryogenically frozen, M. Night Shyamalan's Signs, Avril Lavigne's unfortunate career starting up, the Mojito, the Cosmo, and the Martini kind of coming back to the forefront, the Diane Lane, Richard Gere vehicle, Unfaithful, David Blaine's prominence, I guess, and American Idol's first year. That was 2002. Let's see, 2003, The O.C., the first Pirates of the first and best Pirates of the Caribbean.
I actually like the second one best.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Oof, that was the one that turned me off the rest of the trilogy.
Really? I loved the second one.
Like, that movie ruined the first one for me.
It was so deliciously action-packed and just
fun.
It was so fun. It was just a fun movie.
It was fun.
That's all it was a fun movie. One of those summer popcorn, enjoy yourself in the seas movies.
But yeah, going on with 2003, Trucker Hats, Arnold Schwarzenegger becoming the governor of California, Chappelle Show's beginnings, 50 Cent's in the club, Michael Jackson being accused yet again, and deservedly so, of child molestation, Joe Millionaire, which I had to double check on that, but it wasn't 2003, believe it or not. I kept getting it confused with Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire. Metrosexuality, Clay Aiken, I love the order there.
He's just homosexual.
Yeah, let's just do that. Finding Nemo, Paris Hilton's sex tape, the Tiger Incident with Siegfried and Roy, McGriddles, Saddam Hussein's capture, and the last Lord of the Rings picture, The Return of the King. 2004, Punked.
It's biting off my arm, Siegfried. Oh, it hurts so bad, Roy.
Oh, you made it hurt so good.
Oh no, oh! It hurts really bad. I'm bleeding all over the place.
That's what you said last night.
Boom! Okay. Oh!
We're terrible.
And that is the end of our segment.
We're so terrible. But anyway, 2004, punked. Ken Jennings being on Jeopardy, his big deal.
Hell yeah.
Kabbalah making its kind of big deal. William Hung's weird ass career. Jim McGreevy coming out of the closet and resigning from office as New Jersey governor. The Da Vinci Code, the movie. No, it was just the book, because the book came out before. That's right. Morgan Spurlock's retardedly overrated documentary, Super Size Me. I cannot stand Morgan Spurlock.
Right.
Like, I love documentaries as a genre.
It just made me want McDonald's more.
Really? I mean, honestly. But no, Morgan Spurlock, like, if I can go off on a tangent here, and that's what the podcast is for.
Yeah, bitch.
Yeah. I just winked at you. You didn't see it. But anyway, yeah, Morgan Spurlock, the problem I have with him, and it's not the problem I have with... I love documentaries. I think they're a great medium. I'm a big fan. I fell in love with them in my days in classes, and I kind of want to make one myself someday. But Morgan Spurlock, for some reason, his fame about this bothers me probably more than anybody else, and this is why. Because here's a dude who just said, hey, I'm going to go to McDonald's and eat there for 30 days straight, and then make a movie about it and get fat and puke a few times. No, you're not. No, you're not.
Well, it was well put together. It was interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it was well made, and it had a good flow to it.
But for some reason, like, his fame being because of that bugs me. I don't know why. Like, Michael Moore, for example, who he's kind of a douche, but he makes some decent points. But he's a douchebag.
He's just,
but he makes good points.
Oh my god!
But that is a very slimly redeeming quality for a very fat man. But the point is, Super Size Me, Morgan Spurlock. You have Michael Moore, though, for example. Here's a guy who he went to film school. I mean, this is a part where I become the film school asshole guy who's like, you didn't go to film school. Right. It's like the end scene of The Girl Next Door where the dude's like, hey, how did you do this when you didn't go to school? Fuck you, next question! Which I fucking love. But yeah, like,
that's a good move.
That's an awesome picture. But yeah, I don't want to be that guy, but gosh, Morgan Spurlock makes me want to be that guy who just says, like, fuck you, how dare you have any fame before I do? I'm going to fucking film school.
Did he not go to film school?
He owns
a production company, doesn't he?
He might. I don't know. Like, I just remember something. He seemed smarmy to me. Like, he turned me off.
I think he owns a production company of some sort.
I just don't want to think about that prick. I'm sorry. Super Size Me, Laguna Beach, The Real Orange County.
Blech!
God help us. Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction, which I guess we've confirmed did happen in 2004.
Yeah.
The Ugg Boots coming out. He's not just not that into you by Greg Barrett. The Darknesses, I Believe in a Thing Called Love.
Oh,
mama. Burger King's The Burger King commercials with the guy with the huge king head, which I'm going to question it. It's being put in 2004 because I swear it didn't come out in 2005, but
probably not. But
Dance Revolution, which has been around a lot longer than that.
But I guess it took off then,
I don't even think so. I didn't even really hear about it until at least 2006. Like, that was when I bought my own home version. I mean, that's when things happened with that. I don't know. I'm nitpicking. I'm just a bitch.
Oh, that's
fine. The 2004 World Series, which is a big deal because that wasn't the Red Sox won the first... Well, not the first time, but after a long time.
Cubbies this year. This year is for the Chicago Cubs.
Right on, man. 2005, my graduation year from high school and the first year of college. Pope John Paul II's death and his replacement by Pope Benedict XVI. To Catch a Predator, Grizzly Man, that documentary about the Bears. The Runaway Bride, Jennifer Wilbanks, do you remember her? The woman with the fucked up eyes?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Jose Canseco's biting baseball commentary novel, Juiced. Sudoku, Pat O'Brien's voicemail scandal, do you remember this? I'm so fucking hot for you. Next on the insider, I'm gonna put my penis inside your vagina. Next on the insider. I don't know why he turned into a crazy Jewish man at the end of that rant.
I don't know. It's okay. It's all right though. Is he? Well, he's Irish. But...
Yeah, he's Irish.
Those
damn Irish Jews.
Irish Jews.
I don't know. Anyway. Pat O'Brien's voice mostly had Martha Stewart's release from prison, faux hawks, that hairstyle, which I admit that I've kind of rocked a few times, Hurricane Katrina, and the Michael D. Brown scandal. Yeah, it did happen. YouTube, that was one that bothered me. YouTube had been around for a while, but also it didn't reach prominence until the next year. Like, I didn't even get a YouTube account until at least last summer, or if not earlier, or at least a little bit earlier than that, but not 2005. Okay Goes, Here It Goes Again video, which is another thing I question. I swear I didn't hear that till 2006. Kirstie Alley's short-lived but beloved series, Fat Actress. Bill O'Reilly's sexual harassment lawsuit. That fucker!
Yeah, this totally is the year of the Irish.
This is the year of the Irish people fucking up and deserving every ounce of it. Like, that's
Irish
pretty much what that
news
is.
News people.
I mean, I love the Irish, but the two Irish news people who deserve to get shit on the most got it that year, and boy did they get it, and I love it. Britney Spears is, for some reason, listening to... I guess that was when she married KFED or whatever.
Probably.
2006...
And wait, did you mention March of the Penguins?
March of the Penguins, yeah. March of the Penguins was one. It was the next last thing, because I remember the... Yeah. 2006, Borat, Mel Gibson's DUI arrest, MySpace's prominence, I disagree, but we'll go on. Crocs, those damn shoes. Dreamgirls, Fergie's song, London Bridge, Neil Patrick Harris and Lance Bass coming out of the closet. That was a pretty big deal. The new
Lance Bass is gay.
Did you not know that?
Well, I knew that, but I didn't know that he knew it. Casino Royale.
You're terrible. Yeah, the new Casino Royale with, fuck, what am I forgetting the name also?
Oh, Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig,
oh
thank you. I saw the trailer for the new one today.
Oh,
one with, have you watched this trailer yet?
I just came a baby.
Have you watched the trailer?
No, I haven't.
I'll show you after the show.
Yumminess.
The trailer for Quantum of Solace is up. Go find it, folks. Dick Cheney's hunting incident when he shot an old man in the face. James Blunt's regrettable song, You're Beautiful.
You're beautiful.
Little Miss Sunshine. Pink's song, Stupid Girls.
I hate Pink.
She's kind of falling off the face of the earth to me. Kim Jong-il's missile test, Rachel Ray. Daniel Powder's Bad Day.
Had a bad
fucking
day.
Song. And, whoa, stop the fucking presses. 24. There's the biggest historical inaccuracy yet. 24 is listed in 2006. 24 started in 2001. My freshman
didn't
year of high school.
Didn't it start to suck then?
And, that's why I stopped watching.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you kidding me? That must have been a segment that I completely missed. Good God, that's the wrong one. Oh, fuck you, VH1. 2007, 300.
Oh, we already went over that.
So yeah, that's the whole thing. I love the new millennium. I liked watching it, but it's for fucking retarded to do it now. It's just a stupid idea with a couple of historical inaccuracies. Not as many as I Love the 90s, which is just utter shit, but still pretty bad. Let's see.
Pretty much.
And let's see, I want to mention a few things that we got on the Wikipedia page. Let's just glance at it. I want to find some little things. Although VH1 originally announced the date of the first airing of 2000 episode is Monday, June 23rd, 2008. Its press release, VH1 website, list airing is on the 22nd.
Oh my
God. Oh my gosh, we must remember that little factoid for fucking ever. No, we shouldn't. That's really stupid. Let's see here. Recurring segments. I do want to talk about these for a second. Okay, recurring segments. In addition to the year-specific topics discussed, each episode features a segment called Bushisms with Steve Bridges, probably the most famous George W. Bush impersonator, doing his little thing. He delivers the most popular George W. Bush quote from that year. So we get classics like, you know, there's a saying back home, fool me once, shame on you, fool me... Fool can't get fooled again. That's pretty much what that was, okay? Time Capsule, in which Andrew W.K., fantastic fella, digs up items from a time capsule that corresponds to the episode's year. Cisco's Hotties I Wanted to See in a Thong. I want to talk about that for a second. Cisco, who is great, I mean, he's a talented cat, but here's the thing about Cisco. He totally came out of the closet, like, gosh, at least 6 years ago. They started making jokes about it.
Is he gay?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Because I remember, like, Ari Spears, like, did a bunch of parody sketches about that on Mad TV.
Really?
And, yeah.
I'm not into this whole guys being gay thing. I just don't know. I know Elton John's
I mean,
gay,
I don't mind people being gay.
No.
Matter of fact, it often makes people more awesome. But just to say, like,
But I didn't
Cisco,
know that he came out.
Yeah, well, Cisco came out. Anyway, Cisco.
Elijah Wood came out.
For real?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Elijah Wood came out.
You're fucking with me.
No, I'm not fucking with you.
He's officially come out?
Yeah, I do believe he officially
When was
came
this?
Out. About a year and a half
You're
ago,
kidding. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, we all suspected, but no. Anyway, Cisco...
Little Samwise Gamgee. Oh, Sam, put it harder. Oh, Sam.
That's one of the reasons I love that little bit.
Mr. Frodo! Mr. Frodo!
That is one
reason. Mr. Frodo! Oh, I won't lose you, Mr. Frodo! I'm always right behind you! Oh, Sam, yes, Sam.
Okay.
Yes, Sam, oh, Sam.
But yeah, that's one.
There's only one Lord of the Rings.
Yes, Sam, yes.
Lord of the Cock Rings. Prince
Albert.
That was terrible. But yeah, that's one reason to appreciate that scene in Clerks 2, though, where Randall's talking about the trilogy, you know. And then right before the credits roll, Sam flat-out fucking bricks in Frodo's mouth. And then friggin', what's his name? The dude from Wiseman, Kevin Wiseman from Alias, just fucking pukes on the counter.
I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
As do I. Like, but that is a great fucking speech.
Right up there with Magnolia.
That whole
thing. Hear our podcast.
Yeah, about Watch Magnolia. But yeah, anyway, but I just, you gotta love Randall, like that whole thing where he just keeps, you know, here's the first movie, and they just kind of calmly ambles across the floor. So great. But anyway, get back to this. How Gay Was It? Which is a segment in which the unfortunately famous blogger Perez Hilton chooses an event about from that year, a very prominent event, and rates it on his Gaydar from 1 to 10. The one thing about that segment I did kind of love, and Jesse didn't meet him much this year, but I'll tell you about it, is every time he would do that, the thing he would preface it with was he was like, on a Gaydar scale from 1 to 10, 1 being Pamela Anderson and 10 being Katie Lang, like, that was kind of funny to me. That was fucking funny. But, like, I cannot stand Perez Hilton. He's one of those people that just does not deserve to be famous.
Yeah.
Blogs, each celebrity gives an additional opinion on a certain... Yeah, they do like a fake YouTube video where it's like, you know, Greg McSimmons or whatever. Somebody saying, you know, that was crazy! And then, like, well, the best one, though, was Hal Sparks. You know Hal Sparks.
Yeah.
He's talking about...
God,
Hal Sparks is... What was he talking about? Something about cats, but he kept, like, doing this psychotically realistic meowing sound that was just, like, so creepy, but so fucking funny. And he was, like, cracking up doing it. And he laughed mid-meow, which is one of the creepiest things I've ever heard in my life. But, yeah. Then and now, Taylor Dane, who you may remember as the person who brought you the classic song, Love Will Lead You Back.
Love Will Lead You Back!
My mom loved that song back in the day. But yeah, playlist of that year, Moby. You remember Moby. Picks three songs from a given year. And he picked some decent songs, if it really was his pick. He picked some decent songs. Liars of the Year. Johnny Fairplay, who's one of those people who doesn't deserve to be famous. He was on Survivor. He's the guy who you may have heard
lied about his
grandmother dying or whatever. But yeah, I love the new millennium. I would call it an epic fail. I wouldn't. But it's still a what the fuck kind of moment.
A little bit, yeah.
What
the fuck?
And speaking of profanity.
I love the holidays.
Did they really?
I love toys. I love.
We have the list right here. Let's see. I love the 80s. I love the 70s. I love the 80s Strikes Back. I love the 90s. I love the 90s Part Deux. I love the 80s 3D. I love the holidays. I love toys. I love the 70s Volume 2. And I love the new millennium. I love the holidays and I love toys. I don't know if you saw those. Those were just one. One episode each. That was fine. Because they were talking about different topics that didn't really relate to time. That's fine.
Yeah.
But 24 in 2006. For fucking shame, VH1.
For shame.
But once again, talking about profanity, we're going to get a little bit somber, but then we're going to chat up a few things. To talk about something, as a lot of us heard, most of you heard this past week, last Sunday, the comedy world lost probably one of its best, if not the best.
And one of its most influential.
One of its most influential, George Carlin passed away last Sunday at the age of, I believe it was 71? 71, 81? We got his page.
We have his page.
Let's see, he was, 71.
Yeah.
71. He died at the age of 71 of heart failure. George Carlin, what can we say? The first thing I want to say, and this is something that I was planning on talking about this in one of the podcasts at some point that I really need to talk about, is the fact that here's the thing, and this happens when a classic celebrity, someone who really influenced culture, passes away, is a problem is... this is going to be a gripe, but bear with me here. It's going to sound shallow, but work with me here. It's the thing like when Ray Charles died or when Johnny Cash died, all their albums sell a lot and then they get popular and then that happens again and then we create the Posers and it's the same June of thing. But we shouldn't really be talking about that, but it was just the first thing that popped in my mind. You see what happens when people think. Watch Magnolia, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, bitch.
But getting back to this, the thing about George Carlin is my experience with George Carlin is very limited. and it's a shame that it is, but it is very limited. I think it is for a lot of people, and it's, and, I mean, and that's one thing to say, kind of going back to what I was just saying, is it's not a problem that people discover people after they've passed away. It's good that these people discover them, because they are discovering great artists. They are discovering Ray Charles. They are discovering Johnny Cash, and that's fine. They're finding some great stuff. I discovered Ray Charles. I loved Ray Charles before, but I really kind of discovered
him.
After Ray and after he passed away. And this is, and I see this being that kind of situation, and I don't mind that. Everyone's basic experience with George Carlin, I'm going to say, is probably Bill and Ted, and maybe the 7 Dirty Words You Can't Say on Television.
Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits.
Thank you. Very eloquent reading. Yes. That is the original. That is the original 7 Dirty Words You Can't Say on Television, which he released on his album Class Clown in 1972. And it's been, you know, one of the biggest kind of images or moments in the history of censorship. A lot of people talk about that. Like in my first class in at UNCG for like the broadcasting major, Intro to Media Studies, taught by Frank Donaldson. In that class, we listened to a lot of interesting things, and one day we were talking about obscenity and censorship, and we listened to George Carlin's 7 Dirty Words You Can't Say on Television. We listened to a clip from Howard Stern. We listened to a clip from some other radio show. I don't remember. Like, I know one of those sex, like I think it was Dr. Ruth or something, and they were talking about
it's your vagina.
Oh, Dr. Ruth. But yeah, so we listened to that, and just what's so great about that, and this is just, it really is just a testament to the guy. It's a moment in time, it's a moment in history, a moment in the media, that has become so acclaimed and so beloved, but so pivotal in a lot of reasons, in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. when it comes to censorship. We listened to it in a class.
Yeah.
There was a classroom hall of at least 100 people, and then we're all sitting there. What was so great, it was also like the first time in class I'd ever gotten to hear profanity, which was pretty fucking awesome. But yeah, we're sitting there, and Professor Donaldson's like, I'm going to play you something now. So he pops on the little thing, and he pops that on, and we've listened to that, and everybody's cracking up, and it's just a really fun time, really polarizing moment. And that's like the mark of a true, you know, legend. Just that something they've done can really, like, it's a benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
Everything before and after, like, he's the point, like, Dave Chappelle, and he was talking about Richard Pryor, but I really think this can't apply to George Carlin. On Dave Chappelle's episode of Inside the Actor's Studio, he says that one person once said that when talking about Richard Pryor, you have to look at it like a comedy Darwin's evolution list, in which you're going from, like, you know, the single cell organism to the man standing upright, mm-hmm. and that Richard Pryor was the man standing upright.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I like to say the same for George Carlin.
Yeah, he was one of those.
He was. It's so difficult because I'm 21. You're 18, right? You're 18.
Yes.
You're 18. We're here. We are. We're two young dudes. And the thing is, I'm telling you if I'm wrong about this. We don't really have much experience with him beyond like the really big ones that everybody knows.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, but it's a thing about, you know, just you don't know. And the thing is, it's weird being young but knowing that you really, the world has lost someone
mm-hmm.
that was really important. I mean, yeah. I mean, you can, it's, and maybe it's different for people like me and you who are artists and who work in the media and work in entertainment, because, you know, you do your theater and I do film and theater, and we have this thing going on where, you know, we know when we've lost somebody important, and it's like it becomes as big, if not bigger, than losing a world leader.
Yeah, it's shocking and it's painful. It really is, because it's kind of like the end of an era.
It really fucking, you know, is. And like, because George Carlin, like, he's written a bunch of books that have been really great. He did all his classic HBO comedy specials, have been a bunch of pictures.
First ever host of Saturday Night
That's
Live.
Right, and they actually re-aired that episode Saturday. Did you watch?
No, I didn't.
I have it on my DVR. We should watch it.
Definitely.
His stand-up. That was another thing, but that was my, like, okay, my first experience with George Carlin, right off the bat. I'm going to tell a story, and I'd like to invite you to share your thoughts in a moment. My first experience with George Carlin was actually when he was Mr. Conductor on Shining Time Station. Do you remember this?
Yes.
He was later replaced by Ringo Starr, but he was the original Mr. Conductor.
Yes, I remember that.
And, you know, here he was in that little conductor suit talking to friggin', what's her name, Mindy Cohen. The fucking what's her name from Greece? You know what I mean?
Olivia Newton-John.
No, not Rizzo. The other one, the Beautiful Dropout chick.
Oh, that.
What
chick.
Is her name? Shit, I don't remember. But the point is,
I don't know.
Anyway, she was on that. You remember? If anybody remembers, Shining Time Station was a show that ran on PBS in some local markets and some syndicated areas in the late '80s, early '90s. And the plot of it was set in a train station, and then they intercut it with scenes from the British claymation cartoons of Thomas the Tank Engine, mm-hmm. and that's how Thomas kind of came to America. But speaking about that show, George Carlin was the first Mr. Conductor, and that was my first experience with him. I'm watching this guy, and he's just this dandy, got a little cap on, he's talking to the kids. Little did I know, holy shit.
Shit piss fuck cunt cocksucker motherfucker.
Yeah. And to learn that years later, you're like, gosh, like, that's one of those situations where, like, my mother has always had this really weird barometer when it comes to music scene, where it's like, if someone has ever done anything really dirty and then they host a kid show, she'd offend it.
Yeah.
And that is the thing, like, she, every time me and my sisters would watch this show, she would always have this kind of scowl on her face, like, what's he doing there? Like, you know, I mean, and I kind of get it, but at the same time, really. But yeah, like, that was my first experience with him as friggin' Mr. Conductor, and, you know, yeah, shit, piss, fuck, cunt, talks like a motherfucking tits. Like, that's, wow. My mother also had issues with him because he was very much an atheist. Uh-huh. He didn't believe in anything. I mean, he believed in what he believed in, but not, like, you know, in religious or spiritual fashion. Most of his comedy is based on his disbelief in God, which is, a lot of it's brilliant. Gosh, it's brilliant. Like,
he was very prolific. I mean, he was a philosopher.
He was a philosopher. He put out a lot of great albums, too. Like, gosh.
Just terrific, terrific stuff.
Like,
great
I was talking.
Thinker.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to Jesse before this podcast started actually hours ago when he first came over to our studio here. That we got a bunch of record crates in my library, and I'm pretty sure we got a few records. I'd love to go listen to them at some point. But yeah, here's a man. It was just he was a thinker for our times, a comedic thinker. But yeah, so yeah, my first experience Shining Time Station, and then you see Bill and Ted, and then you learn about the comedy. And you know, I, in all complete honesty, like the first time I cogently heard his comedy was when they re-aired that first episode of Saturday Night Live this past Saturday. Because the original setup for Saturday Night Live was not the way it is now, where it's, you know, sketches and then music. It was it was a lot of intercut stuff. Like, that was the episode that had Andy Kaufman doing the mouse thing. Like, that was a lot of things happening. But he actually didn't participate in any sketches. He was just, like, every sketch or so, he would be on the stage and he would do a brief bit.
Mm-hmm.
So he did a bunch of bits that I've recently learned were apparently very classic. Like, he did a bit about, like, the differences between baseball and football. Mm-hmm. He did a bit about religion. I mean, he... And when he first started out, and that was one thing that I loved... In my very brief knowing things about him, the first bit he did was this thing where it started out where he was just doing these seemingly inane observations, like the kind of things that has become the parody of the comedian, which is like, you know, you ever notice, blah, blah, blah. But he did those, and like, you're starting off, he's like, wow, maybe he wasn't that good. And then like, 10 jokes in, it's like, he hits you with like something really hard that interconnects all of them, you're like, gosh, that is brilliant. It was all leading to, like, a really deep thought that was just, it blew your head off. It was that good.
Yep.
Like, this is a really kind of a weak comparison, but there's an old like, comedy bit that actually Clark Duke and Michael Cera, we were talking about earlier, did at a nightclub in Los Angeles, which is, like, they tell a bunch of really terrible, like, knock-knock jokes and you know, like, chicken cross the road joke, and then at the very end, it's like, you know, the last one they tell all these childish jokes, and the last one they tell is, you know... What did the cop find in his cereal? A severed penis, and then he masturbated it. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, setting you up with all this crap and then blowing you away with one last big bit. And that was the thing he did at the River Gang. And at that point, I was like, gosh, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like, he was classic. And like, you know, he had his stamp of approval from a bunch of people. He was in a bunch of Kevin Smith movies. He was in Dogma, Jane Silent Bob Strike Back, Jersey Girl, like one of his first dramatic performances. He was really good in that. He was in Clerks too, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But he was in most of his movies. Like, here's a guy who was just a beloved man and a man of the people. And yeah, like, but the one thing that I kept thinking about though was looking at like his discography and things like that is his later albums, and I've watched some of his later specials when I was in school. I couldn't get through them because they're so dark. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't offended. I couldn't take it. It was hurting. Because he makes you hurt. But he doesn't. But he's doing it with stuff that should make you hurt. Like, he makes you think about things you don't want to think about. And boy, does he. I mean, his later albums were a lot about, like, being close to death and just the tragedies of the world. And it's one of those situations where, like, after you hear that, you're like, and it's a shame he had to die right after that. But at the same time, there's that, maybe that was the point.
Yeah, there's a form of poetry to it. It's poetic.
Maybe that was his point all along. Yeah. What was the name of his last album? His last special and his last album were both called It's Bad For You, and then the one before that was Life Is Worth Losing. Which, yeah, I mean, I remember the commercials for Life Is Worth Losing coming on right when I was with my freshman year at UNCG, and it was commercials where he's, like, repeating these crazy things, like, I've been food, diet, and blah, blah, like, all these rhymes things, but at the end it was like, you know, I'm not even going to do it, Jeff. I'm not even going to try. Go find his stuff, and don't feel bad for finding it. Like, we may have talked about this, and maybe that was kind of a running theme of this episode, but don't feel bad about reminiscing. If you mean it. Like, don't... Yeah. I mean, I do look down on people who reminisce just because it's the popular thing to do. But I do kind of do that. But here's a guy who deserves your reminiscence. Here's a guy who deserves the fact for you to go back, find his albums, find his specials, watch them, and learn what a brilliant man this was. And I absolutely plan to do that in the next little bit. I absolutely plan to find out more about him.
Heck yeah.
But that's... That's kind of what I wanted to talk about when it comes to that. So, Jesse, you got any final thoughts here about James Brown?
I don't know. Just a terrific, terrific, terrific comedian, terrific philosopher, a benchmark, and shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker,
and tits. Yeah. That is the last word I think we can all dance to. Mm-hmm. But yes, and I hope that hopefully that wasn't too dark of a note. We did. I like to say we celebrated something, and I hope you will join a number of people. Maybe they don't mean it, maybe they don't, but go find this guy. I'm gonna do it. I hope you do it too. Find out, because here was a guy, one of the greatest American thinkers, and that's that. Go find out about him. Learn about him. Find out. But yes, that's about all the time we have. Jesse, any final thoughts in general?
In general, I have to take a piss.
Do you have to take a shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker? I'm just terrible.
No, I don't have to take a shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. I just have to really pee.
Okay, that's fine.
Basically.
Okay, so with that in mind, this has been another edition of the Original Unoriginal Podcast. Jesse, I hope you'll come back.
Oh yeah.
I would love to do this again very, very soon.
We just shook hands as though you could see us on, like, a TV screen.
We almost did a photo op, but it didn't happen. But anyway, I hope you'll join us next time. But until the next time I see you, go experience 7 days.